This is a continuing episode about the film The Xenophobes. The series started at episode 342.
Mommy's an angel of peace. She will stop the fighting.
You've got a husband and two kids. And Cottrell is...
I'm Lancer Kind. I co-wrote a science fiction film called The Xenophobes. It's about a crew of astronauts who traveled 60 years to make first contact with an alien civilization. And things, didn't go the way anyone expected. Not for the characters, and honestly, not for the people who made the film either. We shot this film during a pandemic. Our lead actor flew from Moscow to Manhattan, Kansas, through borders that were closing behind her. Our director was also our cinematographer and our editor, and the story we ended up telling feels even more relevant now than when we wrote it. These are some of the folks who brought this film to life. They were the actors, the director, support staff, and the technical staff. In this episode, we're going to talk to Scott Freebie. He is the composer and the music producer for the film. All right. Hey, Scott, introduce yourself. What's your name and role in the movie?
My name is Scott Freebie, and I am a composer, and so I composed all of the music and recorded all of the music for The Xenophobes.
Nice. Yeah, that was like, you know, if I was to pick like one role that had like giant impact across the whole film, it would be that. That was like really incredible. I was so excited when I saw the impact of that.
Thank you.
Now, how did you get connected with the film?
Hal Dace, one of the co-directors of the film, he and I were childhood friends, and we've known each other since we were, I don't know, 10 or 11 years old. And I am a composer and was a public school teacher for 37 years. And during the course of the time when Hal and I were living in Manhattan, Hal lived for a while in London and got a lot of his training over there. But when we were in Manhattan together, Hal worked in our school district, and he would sometimes come to the end-of-the-year concerts. And at the end-of-the-year concerts, I would create a piece of a multidisciplinary teaming project that involved history or political events, or mainly history. And we would have different classes in the school come together, and like the English classes would write the scripts for what was spoken. We'd have kids from the drama department act out the scripts that were written by the English department. I would compose the music for the band, the orchestra, and the chorus of the two schools that I taught at, and we would put on a big production. Well, Hal liked these productions, and he asked me to write music for The Xenophobes. And I said, I would love that opportunity because it was a bucket list thing for me to do, to be able to write music for a movie. So that's what I really wanted to do.
Yay! Bucket list taken care of. One item, at least.
One item, yeah. But as I understand it, Lancer, you were also a co-writer on the movie. Is that correct?
Yeah. Hal and I wrote the script approximately, I don't know, probably a year before it actually went into production, something roughly like that.
Well, That's very significant, and I'll tell you why. To whatever degree you and Hal collaborated on the text of the script, I got the script from Hal and began work on the music from the script, not from the visuals that were in the movie. Oh. And that's significant because of the way it all developed. I don't want to say I wrote all the music with just the script. That is not true. I wrote a ton of the music by having it in a music writer program and actually composing to the video as it unfolded. But of the significant pieces, I was able to write a majority of the big pieces that I wrote for the movie based upon the visualization that yours and Hal's writing gave me in my mind. And I thought that was significant because most of the time, folks who write for a movie get, you know, they get the visuals and then they write to what they see on the visuals. And I did a little bit differently in that I took the words that were written on the script and visualized things. Now, it was interesting because when I created certain pieces for the film, I had a visualization that ended up not necessarily being the same vision that the visuals gave once the production was in swing. Mm-hmm. What was remarkable about it was that the music fit. It fit what was the script, it fit what the visuals were, and there was just very little tweaking that I had to do on some of the major production items.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I've never followed the process of a composer's very closely, so this is all very much new thing. Is this unusual to you, as far as you're familiar with that?
From the standpoint that the processes that I've watched other film composers use, they talk about getting, you know, the daily visuals.
Right.
Intact, they import them into the music writer program that they're using, or the DAW that they're using, and they compose to what they see on the screen. And basically what I did on a lot of the tunes, they had already been composed. And I fit them into the music because I'd already composed it for this particular scene, so when that scene came up and available to me, I just placed it in there and then had to do some tweaking to get the timings correct and the visualizations of hit points correct. So yeah. It was a really neat process, and I'm a person who's I'm a very religious person, and I prayed a lot to Heavenly Father to direct and guide me on these things, and I think that my prayers were answered.
Well, excellent. Now, were there any big challenges? Like, can you remember a part that was like particularly difficult?
Yeah, we had a sequence that took over 11 minutes. I think it was 11 minutes and 45 seconds of music straight. And it had to do with when they were coming in to Galiz and establishing an orbit, and then the missiles got fired, and then, you know, they're trying to avoid being killed by the Galician people that are firing missiles at them. And there was that sequence that was like 11 minutes and 45 seconds long. And then there was another battle sequence where they had their shuttlecraft came in, and the bomb exploded, and you know, the missile took out the bomb that was coming towards them, but it hurled the shuttlecraft into a spin.
Right.
And that particular sequence was difficult because I had completed the entire sequence, and then Hal made some cuts. And he made some editing cuts, and the music did not align anymore. And so I had to go back in, and I had thought about using percussion and a lot of percussive interest, you know, heavy drum situations or whatever, so that I could set up a pattern, and then I could just chop parts of the pattern out. Mm-hmm. And so what ended up happening, I think there was probably 45 to 50 seconds of music cut out of this pattern. But based upon what I had done with the percussion, I was able to meld it together. And so that was particularly challenging.
All right. Here we are. What was your favorite scene to compose?
Oh, there are a lot of favorite scenes that I have. The first one that comes to my mind was they're back on Earth. They're at the school. They're getting ready to make contact with their families. And it's just kind of a dream sequence montage where you see families connecting via the, I think it's a
heptacork
channel or whatever. They're connecting with members of their family, and it was just this beautiful dream sequence. When I had read that in the script, I composed most all of that music prior to seeing the actual scenes. And what made it neat was I had this visualization of Thelonious and his wife being in the kitchen and dancing with their girls as little girls. And just the beautiful nature of a family coming together. And that was my perspective on it. Well, it turns out that these folks are communicating maybe light years away from where they are. And they're connecting with family. Mm-hmm. And that was a beautiful moment for me to make all of that come to fruition.
Cool. All right.
I also like the sequences with the diplomat and the doctor when they're coming on to the shuttle. They're getting ready to go down to the surface. And it almost looked comical the way that the doctor, you know, turns around and walks towards his seat, and there she is at the seat, and he just, he has to go over here. And I found that extremely funny. And so I set up an idea of this, you know, it was just a humorous thing that I could do. And then it worked beautifully as an end sequence when Penny Culler's character at the end, she's fidgeting around, then she pulls out her sunglasses and ding, like that. I worked to get that cue perfectly.
Nice.
And there were some other cues that, because of an edit here or there, you know, it went duh, and it was supposed to be right there.
Right, right.
So it's probably only noticeable to me because I spent hours and hours and hours trying to make sure that those footfalls were perfect. But in some of the sequences, you can see that I did write to the picture that I was seeing on the screen. Mm-hmm. In that, I took the footfalls of the individuals that were on camera and I made that my tempo.
Oh.
And so you can see in the sequence where the soldier tracking Marty down, and that Joseph Disberger, his character, is tracking Charles Sutherland.
There you are. Thank you.
Yeah. Charles Sutherland, he was a fun guy to write for, and Joseph Disberger did a great job as well. But when Joseph's character was tracking through, the footfalls were what I was trying to align the music with, and heavy on the percussion because it was a dramatic sequence. And the toughest thing to do, Andrew Smith, who played Thelonious, is a friend of mine. He lives just down the street from me here in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd tell him every now and again, I'd say, you know, I watched you die like 75 times this week. I watched Andrew die like, I don't know, 75, 80 times. And the thing about the characters and the actors in this film that I really, really appreciated was that, you know, Lancer, I probably watched the film 900 times.
Oh, my God.
You know, from all the details, and you get it, and you got to track the flow, and you got to watch it over and over again. I never got bored. I never got bored of their acting. I never got bored of the script. It was wonderful. I just can't say enough about the actors, and especially those young child actors.
Mm.
The two young ladies that played in there, Jasmine Ramirez, age 13, and Naima Cruz. Those two child actors were just fabulous in what all the different sequences of the film that they were in.
Wow. Okay. That's cool. Yeah, 900 times is a crazy amount of movie watching. I guess that means that people who work on films have to really love films. Otherwise, they can't do it. It would just drive them mad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
900 is conservative.
Wow. So now, after all that watching, did the film give you something interesting to consider regarding present society?
Absolutely. I mean, you can't help but understand. Well, let me put it this way. Our present situation with the present administration in America is ridiculous that's my opinion. That's my opinion. You can have any opinion you want, but that's my opinion. And when I saw, you know, I composed music with a minor modality at the start when they were contemplating having to take out the defenses of the planet. And it was a somber thing. And it was I created it with what's called an interlocking theme. And what it was is each individual had respective things that they had to do to ensure that the missiles would go down and destroy the capabilities of the Galesians to send missiles up to harm them.
Mm.
But yet they really were making an effort not to hurt any of the Galesians. That was their point.
Mm.
And it was somber, and it was like melancholy, and it was like, we have to do this. And the interlocking theme kind of translated into the idea that, okay, you've got the captain starting something. She passes a responsibility on to the next person, who passes a responsibility on to the next person, the next person, the next person. So you have an interlocking theme that transforms into this symphonic sound that is very detailed and very structured. Well, it was sad for them to do this.
Hmm.
And that is in total contradiction to what our present Secretary of Defense,
right,
who's called himself the Secretary of War, the warmongering that's going on with the present administration just turns my stomach. And, you know, if I was composing music for this administration to be highlighting what they were doing, I'd have to have some kind of macabre, joyous sound in what they're doing. So I'm grateful that the xenophobes felt bad about creating war. And there's even a line that Thelonious says, we're using violence to establish peace.
Right.
That's not the way to do it, is it?
Right.
And I think that goes for what our present day situation is. We shouldn't use violence to establish peace.
Yeah, that's true. The crew spent a lot of time trying to find a lot of other options and turmoil to try to find a way to not come off as jerks if you're going to meet a new civilization.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. That's really, really nice call out on that. Regarding the crew and the cast, or any special call out you want to make there?
Well, Svetlana is just an amazing actress. I love the fact that it was the majority of leads were women. Mm-hmm. I love that fact. And that this concept that if you're going to go into space and you're going to conquer and all this stuff, that it has to be men doing it. You know, I like the strong characters of the women. I thought Cottrell, Paula, she saves the day. She comes in, and I wrote a trumpet fanfare for her. You know, it was a triumphant moment that she comes in and saves the day, you know, and I really appreciate that. Did Hal tell you about Svetlana's character's last name, Bala?
I'm not sure what this would be about, so I don't know. I'm not sure where this is going.
Hal and I had a friend named Anil Bala, and I wish I knew where he was today. I'd call him up and give him a hug over the phone. We spent many a day together just playing, you know, elementary school, middle school, that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
We lost a little track of each other in high school, but just the great memories that we have with Anil and his brother and sister, I think. Anyway, he used the name Bala as her last name, and that was, he was also a childhood friend of ours.
I didn't know that. No, I didn't know that at all.
And Penny Cullors. Penny is, she's kind of big time here in Manhattan, Kansas, with the theatrical arts in Manhattan, Kansas. And I knew her from that, and then got to meet her 900 plus times through the movie. And I think her character was fun to work with, especially the comedic things that she was doing in the film. And they were all a joy to work with. Every single one of the characters was a joy to work with. And I just can't say more.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that was an interesting twist to me, the comedic flares, because sometimes they were done in situations where something very serious is about to happen, and it's actually really healthy for the audience to experience a little bit of a different emotion before we get them into a long, like, serious set where True. They're going to be paying attention and getting tense and scared. So that comedic flair is really good to release the tension a little bit in order to create space for more tension.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, hey, Scott, it was great catching up with you. I really enjoyed chatting with you over when we had that premiere in Manhattan, and that was so enjoyable. I hope things are really going well, and I look forward to the next time we get to maybe even work together or at least talk about something together.
Yeah, sounds fun.
The Xenophobes is available right now on Amazon Prime Video. You can rent it for around $4 if you watch it and enjoy it. The single best thing you can do for us is to leave a star rating and a review on Amazon. And for goodness sakes, tell your friends to watch it too. For an indie film like ours, every review helps new people find us. You can find behind-the-scenes photos and updates on our Facebook page at facebook.com/apistrophepictures. There is a link in the show notes. What are show notes? Show notes show up right in your podcast player for your easy access. If you're using a podcast player, they're right there in the interface. If you downloaded the show from a website as an MP3, go back to the website where you got the MP3 and you will see the show notes there. And if you want more about the making of the film or some cool banners, type into your favorite search engine, LancerKind.com/xenophobes/banners. There, the magic of the search engine will bring you right to my doorstep, and you will be able to click and download whatever banner you need for whatever social media situation you've got. Sport your colors and show off to people about this film. So that will help spread the word, and we will love that. You should download your Xenophobes banner today. By the way, this is the last episode of the series about the Xenophobes. The first episode started at episode 342. If you missed that episode or any of the intervening episodes, you can look it up by typing in your favorite search engine, Sci-Fi Thoughts, the Xenophobes, and the magic of the search engine will get you where you need to be. Although this is the last episode, you still have your homework. Go rent the film and enjoy it. Take care.